There was one cloud on the horizon, though, darkening the newlywed's bliss. Molly. Even though Albina now rarely saw her as the two lived distantly, all of Molly's sisters couldn't help but be concerned by her deteriorating condition. But as the weeks passed, it wasn't just her mouth that became sore. She started to have aches and pains in completely unconnected places. My sister, Quinta remembered, began having trouble with her teeth and her jawbone and her hips and feet. We thought it was rheumatism. The doctor administered aspirin and sent her home to Highland Avenue. At least she lived with an expert. One of the women she boarded with, 50-year-old Edith Mead, was a trained nurse and she cared for Molly as best she could. But nothing in her training could make sense of this disease. She had never seen anything like it. Neither Kniff, nor Molly's family doctor, nor Edith seemed able to make her better. Every appointment brought forth another expensive doctor's bill, but no matter how much Molly spent, there was no cure. In fact, the more Kniff tried to help, and he employed some extreme methods of treatment, the worse Molly became, the worse her teeth were and the ulcers and her gums. Sometimes Kniff didn't even have to pull her teeth anymore. They fell out on their own. Nothing he did arrested the disintegration in the slightest degree. And disintegration was the word for it. Molly's mouth was literally falling apart. She was in constant agony, and only superficial palliatives brought her any relief. For Molly, a girl who had always loved to joke around, it was unbearable. Her smile, which had once been a toothy grin that beamed across her face, was unrecognisable as more and more of her teeth came out. Well, no matter. She was in too much pain to smile anyway. As Christmas passed and the new year began, the doctors finally thought they had diagnosed her mysterious condition. Sores in the mouth, joint pain, extreme tiredness, a young, single woman living outside the family home. Well, it was obvious, really. On 24th of January 1922, her physicians tested her for syphilis, or Cupid's disease, a sexually transmitted infection. But the test came back negative. The doctors would have to think again. By now, Dr. Kniff had noticed certain things about her case that made him doubt his initial diagnosis. It was, it appeared, an extraordinary affliction. It was almost like something was attacking her from the inside, though he knew not what it could be. As well as the seemingly unstoppable disintegration of her mouth, to his trained nostrils, the noticeable smell coming from her seemed peculiar. It differed decidedly from the odour commonly associated with the usual forms of necrosis of the jaw. Necrosis meant bone decay. Molly's teeth, those that were left, were literally rotting in her mouth. After conducting further research, Kniff reached a conclusion. She was, he determined, suffering from a condition not unlike phosphorus poisoning. It was the same suggestion Catherine Sharp's doctor had made when she'd had her outbreak of teenage spots a few years before. Fossy jaw, as the victims of phosphorus poisoning had grimly nicknamed the condition, had very similar symptoms to those that Molly was enduring. Tooth loss, gum inflammation, necrosis and pain. And so, at her next appointment, Kniff asked Molly how she was employed. "Painting numbers on watches so that they will shine at night," she responded, wincing as her tongue formed the words and touched the ulcers in her mouth. With that, his suspicions increased. Kniff decided to take matters into his own hands. He visited the radium plant, but received little cooperation.